This is Free Thought Radio with co-hosts Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Imagine there's no heaven. Seize if you try. Sky. Imagine all the people living for today.
Hello, I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor. Are you an angry atheist? Or maybe you're just angry at being called an angry atheist. We're going to talk about that later on today's show.
I'm Dan Barker, and there's a lot of things to be happy about, but maybe sometimes we should be angry about some things. You can be angry and friendly at the same time. I'm Dan Barker, your friendly neighborhood atheist of the airwaves. This is the August 11th, 2012 broadcast of Free Thought Radio. This show is produced in Madison, Wisconsin. It's broadcast in other cities around the country.
Free Thought Radio is the weekly production of FFRF, the Freedom From Religion Foundation. Our website's ffrf.org. And we work to promote free thought. Our members are atheists, agnostics, skeptics, a variety of irreverence. And we have 19,000 members nationwide, making us the largest free thought organization in the country. And we also work diligently as a state church watchdog to keep religion out of government, which is required under the constitutional principle of the separation between state and church.
Today, we're going to talk with the popular blogger, Greta Christina.
Her new book, it just came out, is called Why Are You Atheists So Angry? Greta Christina says, if you aren't mad about the harm of religion and religious beliefs, maybe you're just not paying attention.
So now some news about FFRF victories to remove religion from government that actually makes me very unangry. Annie Laurie, tell us about Whiteville.
Yeah, just this week, we finally settled with the obdurate Tennessee town of Whiteville, which was not named that way because it was all white only. We wondered about that, but it was named for a person. But we've had a difficult struggle there with the mayor, who has called us something that we can't say over the airwaves when we complained about the huge cross on their water tower. And we've had a long negotiation when we complained about a year ago and said we're going to have to file suit if you don't do something about that cross on the water tower. The mayor spent over $4,000 in taxpayer funds to remove one arm of the cross, and we thought, okay, it's not a cross anymore, we'll let it go.
It's another execution symbol.
So in December, he kind of inflamed the situation by sticking crosses in front of City Hall on government property and putting wreaths on them, and that's when we said we've had enough, and we sued. And so we have finally this week had an agreed judgment. We are getting a two-thirds of the money that we have spent, about $20,000 back on this. They have agreed not to put any more crosses on public property. So it's a victory. And
Great. Yeah,
we're very pleased that, of course, the Constitution is being obeyed and we aren't going to be giving this appearance that we are a Christian theocracy.
So that makes us very unangry, but here's an issue that makes us a bit angry. The city of Augusta, Georgia, well, we do have a victory now. They were hosting a monthly prayer breakfast, and the mayor in that town was saying, I'm going to keep doing that as long as I want to. Well, the Freedom From Religion Foundation complained, and the mayor of Augusta just agreed last week to discontinue its involvement in organizing, coordinating, and promoting the monthly mayor's prayer breakfast. Let's listen to a news story from Augusta. This is, what is this? This is WRDW 12 News Augusta.
The mayor's prayer breakfast will now be called the community prayer breakfast. Today, Mayor Dee Copenhaver announced he is volunteering to let the organization, coordination, and promotion of the event be taken over by private sponsors. It will also take on that new name, community prayer breakfast, to avoid the appearance of endorsement by the city. The Freedom From Religion Foundation challenged the mayor's event. The foundation says it commends the city for agreeing to discontinue its involvement in the prayer breakfast.
The City of Augusta and the Freedom From Religion Foundation have been going back and forth since Foundation staff attorney, senior staff attorney Rebecca Markert, first complained back in June. She sent two letters to the city calling for the mayor to cease all organization of that prayer breakfast officially. The open records request revealed that the executive assistant to the mayor, Karen Nixon, was primarily responsible for coordinating the event. She selected the churches, sent out invitations for this sectarian event. She also told ministers to pick at least three scripture verses. So the event will now no longer be advertised on the city's website with that misleading title, Mayor's Prayer Victory. Not only is this a victory,
breakfast.
The Mayor's Prayer Breakfast. I'm reading ahead of myself here. Not only is this a victory for FFRF, it can be counted as a success for the Augusta taxpayers. City officials will now be compelled to pray on their own time and pray on their own dime.
Yeah, coordinating a monthly Christian prayer breakfast is a little bit too much. So that has ended, and congratulations to Rebecca. And now we are talking about things that have made us happy, and now here's something that I think should make everyone very dismayed, if not angry, and that is the prosecution of that girl band by the Russian government. They are, as we are recording this a little early, we don't know whether the trial is still continuing, whether the young women will have been found guilty or not and sentenced. But you may have been following this in the news, that this feminist punk band called Pussy Riot had staged an anti-Putin performance inside a cathedral in Moscow. It was called the Christ the Savior. And they have been put on trial for basically for blasphemy. And the religious men in Russia, the patriarchs of the Orthodox religion, are going after these young women. The New York Times quoted one of them, the leader of one Orthodox group, saying, "We're going to rip them up and burn them like in the Middle Ages." And others calling for the toughest sentences, 3 years or more. The New York Times, bizarrely, this article on Thursday, August 9th, the reporter referred to the victims, not the women being the victims, but an altar server at the cathedral called a victim, Pavel Shlevlanov, I don't know how to say it. He was quoted saying that we must defend the interests of all believing Orthodox Christians, quote, our God-loving forefathers who built churches and monasteries did not do this just for prayer. They put in their spiritual foundation so that the Russian people, we and you, have immunity, so that we could stand, fight with our external enemies, our internal enemies. These three young women is whom he's referring to. And they're just going after them, and I don't know if you've seen their pictures.
Yeah,
they're very cute, they're very young, and you can actually see the performance on YouTube, and we're going to play that.
And this is them actually in that Orthodox church singing a song that's called Prayer to the Virgin. So they're actually in church praying to the Virgin Mary to remove Putin from the land.
Черные рясы, золотые погоны, все прихожане ползут на поклоны, призрак свободы на небеса.
И пройдет рай в Сибирь, когда...
Глубоко губей, склоны седой, ведет протестующих снизовый конвой, кто нас следящего не оскорбит.
Женщина может рожать и любить.
Well, we're not going to play the entire thing, but you can see it on YouTube. And this is, they're in church saying a prayer.
And it's actually, I mean, they're pretty cute. They're dancing around in these little mini skirts and...
these baklava, whatever those called, those hoods over their heads to protect their identity.
And, you know, this is like it's a witch hunt. And you can go to fff.org/news, look for our action alert about them to stay informed and write the ambassador and do something to help these young women who are basically being prosecuted for blasphemy.
And many artists and singers and performers around the world
Madonna
are protesting against this... censorship
abuse.
Of free speech. So here's a little bit more of their band in the background here. Stay tuned. We're going to hear a lighter side of free thought. We're going to hear some gentler music of some words of Robert J. Ingersoll. And
his birthday coming up.
His birthday is today, August 11th.
And then Greta Christina.
And we'll listen to Greta Christina about her book, Why Are You Atheists So Angry?
Ask for a sample issue of Free Thought today and find out more about the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org or phone 1-800-335-4021. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor. We are co-directors of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, which is an educational charity, and we hope today you'll join us at ffrf.org.
We talked earlier about the water tower issue, the cross on the water tower in Whiteville. Well, they say Whiteville, Tennessee, which, as Annie Laurie pointed out, is integrated. The city council is pretty integrated. But the Christian cross is now settled. It's no longer a Christian cross, and we had a victory in that case. Some of the freethinkers in Memphis who've been following this issue, the Memphis Freethought Alliance, have invited me to come down and talk about it on August the 26th. I'll be there that Sunday. And the title of my talk is Tilting at Water Towers, the Battle to Keep Church and State Separate. So the Memphis Freethought Alliance sent out a press release to the media saying Dan Barker's coming down to talk about this whole thing. Well, someone in the media misinterpreted it, and they said, the Freedom From Religion Foundation is now suing the city of Memphis to remove prayer from city council, which is actually something that we...
Well, we may do that.
We may.
We're not set up to do that yet.
So I didn't see their press release, but it must have mentioned that we're considering that. So the two major news TV stations ran a story about it this last week, and both of them called me to talk about it. And really, it was to promote the event that I'm going to. But let's listen to one of those. It's ABC 24 about this whole issue. We've talked about this before, and we're still complaining about this Memphis issue. But here's the story out of Memphis just this last week.
New at 10, prayer in the Mid-South under attack again by a national atheist group.
A national atheist group is planning to sue the city of Memphis because the council prays before each meeting.
City council members told ABC 24's Jackie Orozco they have bigger things to worry about.
Let us pray.
It is prayers like these.
Almighty God and gracious God, we have come again to another meeting of the council. And therefore, God, we petition your presence.
That have people upset. So much so, a national atheist group called the Freedom From Religious Foundation wants to sue the Bluff City.
There have been a lot of decisions at various circuit levels and at the Supreme Court declaring sectarian prayer, at least, prayer to Jesus and Christian prayer to be unconstitutional.
University of Memphis law professor Steve Mulroy disagrees.
The Supreme Court has ruled that legislative prayer is not unconstitutional. The Supreme Court in Marsh v. Chambers said because of the long history and tradition of it, prayer at legislative sessions was not going to be a violation of separation of church and state.
We're free in this country to disagree about religious issues, but what we are not free to do is ask our government to settle the argument. We don't have majority rule when it comes to the Bill of Rights.
City Councilman Jim Strickland says if the group believes there's a case to go ahead and sue, but he's not worried.
You know, Memphis, we have so many problems. We've got blight and poverty and a declining population. And even though the crime rate's going down, it's still too high. You know, that's where we focus as a council, on those important issues that really affect people's daily lives.
The Freedom From Religion Foundation will hold a public meeting on August 26th at the main library on Poplar Avenue to discuss all the other issues going on in the Mid-South. In downtown Memphis, Jackie Orozco, CW 30 News.
So if they want to focus on all the important issues, then stop praying and get to work.
Get off your knees and get to work. And the situation in Memphis, and we are looking into a lawsuit there, is extraordinary because they give they have a chaplain of the week or chaplain of the day, and they have a goodie bag. And in fact, our senior staff attorney, Rebecca Market, has a goodie bag where they give all of these presents to the ministers, and they basically laud them and introduce them, and and they have almost exclusively sectarian Christian prayers. So it would be a tempting lawsuit we are looking into.
And that expert who was quoted, that so-called expert, got it wrong. That Marsh decision actually works against them because the prayers cannot be directed at the public, according to Marsh, and they must be totally non-sectarian. So he's got it wrong. So
we're going to have to erase all that prayer out of it. We're going to hear a song that's the opposite of a prayer. And who wrote that?
Well, we're going to hear a song. The words were written by Robert G. Ingersoll. We said earlier that today, August 11th, is Ingersoll's birthday. Robert Ingersoll was born in 1833, the great agnostic orator. He became the best-known advocate of free thought in the 19th century in the U.S. He was the son of a pastor. He said when he was a kid, the minister asked us if we knew that we all deserved to go to hell, and we all answered, yes. Then we were asked if we'd be willing to go to hell if it was God's will, and every little liar shouted, yes. He became an attorney, and Ingersoll was a colonel in the Civil War. He was appointed Illinois' first attorney general, but he refused to halt his controversial lectures, so his career was cut short. But he became a famous national political person for his nomination speech for James G. Blaine for president at the Republican Party. He was good friends with three U.S. presidents, and he was known and admired by most of the leading progressives of his day and the thinkers. He traveled the country for 30 years. He traveled in Europe. He spoke to capacity audiences. He once attracted 50,000 people. Imagine, before sound systems and air conditioning, 40,000 people too many for the Exposition Center. He had 3 to 4 hour lectures on Shakespeare, on Voltaire, and on Burns. But most of the crowds wanted to hear him talk about the Bible and religion, where he denounced the Bible and religion. He got speaking fees back then, which ranged as high as $7,000. He married Eva Parker Ingersoll, a rationalist, whom he called a woman without superstition, which was the name of Annie Laurie's book, taking it from that title. He dedicated his book to her. He settled in Peoria, then he went to Washington, D.C. He defended accused men in the Star Route scandal. And he later went to New York. He was a devoted family man and a true, honest free thinker. He said, all religions are inconsistent with mental freedom. Shakespeare is my Bible. Burns is my hymn book. He said, I don't borrow ideas. I have a factory of my own. He said, I don't believe in putting out the sun to keep the weeds from growing. And then there was an interesting story. A reporter asked him when he got off the boat from Europe, what are your views on baptism, Robert Ingersoll? And Ingersoll said, with soap, baptism is a good thing. So I was reading part of the 12-volume Dresden edition, and in volume 4, there's this very long poem he wrote called Declaration of the Free. It's too long for a song. I cut out most of it, and I put it into music. And even today, we can only play excerpts of that song.
Yeah, so we have Dan Barker's version of Declaration of the Free from the CD Friendly Neighborhood Atheist.
We have no gods to serve or fear, no hell to shun, no devil with malicious leer when life is done. And endless sleep may close our eyes, asleep with neither dreams nor sighs. We have no master on the land, no king in air. Without a manacle we stand, without a prayer, without a fear of coming night. We seek the truth we love the light. We waste no time in useless dread, in trembling fear. The present lives, the past is dead, and we are here, all welcome guests at life's great feast. We need not help from ghost or priests. The hands that help are better far than lips that pray. Love is the ever-gleaming star that leads the way, that shines not on vague worlds of bliss, but on a paradise in this.
Dan Barker singing Ingersoll. Coming up, Greta Christina talking about why are you atheists so angry?
The things that you're liable to read in the Bible, it ain't necessarily so. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And we have on the phone with us from, I think from San Francisco, that's where she lives, Greta Christina. Many of you listeners know who Greta Christina is. She's one of the most popular bloggers in the blogosphere. Her blog is called Greta Christina's Blog, and she's been counted as one of the most popular atheist bloggers. She's a regular contributor to the online political magazine Alternet. And her writing has appeared in a lot of magazines, a lot of newspapers, anthologies. She wrote in the Chicago Sun-Times, the Skeptical Inquirer, an anthology called Everything You Know About God Is Wrong, has an article by her and also an article by me in that same one. So I guess we are co-famous atheists here in the same book. Greta is editor of many anthology series. She's author of a book called Bending. She's been writing professionally since 1989 on topics including atheism, sexuality, sex positivity, skepticism, LGBT issues. She writes about politics, culture, and I just noticed that she writes a lot about her cats. So we should we should ask her about that. She's on the speakers bureaus. I've seen her speak in public, the Secular Student Alliance Center for Inquiry, and she lives in San Francisco with her wife, Ingrid. So, Greta, welcome to Free Thought Radio.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
And congratulations on your hot-off-the-press book, Why Are You Atheists So Angry? 99 Things That Piss Off the Godless.
Is that like 99 bottles of beer on the wall? Or is that
Definitely, we should turn it into a song.
So why did you write this book?
Well, I wrote this book because, you know, as an atheist, you know, it's hard to look around the world and look at religion as an atheist and not get angry about things, not get angry about, you know, the ways that, you know, religion harms people. The everything from, you know, the child molestation scandals in the Catholic Church to, you know, banning, you know, churches donating huge amounts of money to get gay marriage banned, to, you know, the horrible oppressive theocracies, you know, Islamic theocracies, in the Arab world and in the Middle East, and yet when believers hear atheists talk about, you know, how angry they are about religion, a lot of times their response is, well, why are you atheists so angry? And they talk about it as if it was something wrong with us, you know, that there was something, you know, that we're angry because we're alienated from God, or we're angry because we're bitter and unhappy, or, you know, we're angry, you know, because we've been injured by, you know, they talk about our anger as if there's something wrong with us. And I felt like I wanted to write this book to answer that question. Why are you atheists so angry? To point out, well, we're angry because we have something legitimate to be angry about. We're angry because religion is a really bad idea and it's done a lot of harm in the world. And I also wrote it to I know this is going to sound a little paradoxical that you would write a book about anger to inspire people, but I wrote this book to inspire other atheists. I think that when you look at the history of social change movements, you see that anger is often a very powerful motivating force. In fact, I would argue that it always is a very powerful motivating force, that people are inspired to take action when they see terrible harm done in the world. And so I want to inspire atheists to get involved, and I'm hoping that this book does that.
Well, the Bible has an angry God and an angry Jesus, so what are they complaining about?
Good point, yes.
Before we talk about the contents, I'm hung up on the cover, which I think is very cute. And I ran into you, I think it was Secular Student Alliance or the Free Thought and Women Conference, and you showed me the cover of your upcoming book. It's got you on this podium saying reason and your fist is in the air. And how did you get that cover?
Actually, I did a design contest when I was doing the book. I put out a call on my blog. I said, if there's any, you know, graphic designers, if there's any artists who are interested in designing the cover for my book, you know, do a cover. And, you know, everybody who participated in the contest got a copy of the book, and then the winner got, you know, some money, not a lot of money because I don't have a whole lot of it, but got some money and got multiple copies of the book. And this cover design came in, and I just fell in love with it. There were a lot of really good designs, and I was kind of sorry I couldn't use them all, but this one just hit it out of the park, and I loved it.
And on the back, there's a red fist in the air.
Yes.
And your book is also available on Kindle.
Yes, the book is available in print. It's also available on Kindle, on Nook. It's on Smashwords in multiple different formats, and it's coming out as an audiobook later this month.
So I think you're absolutely right. There are many things for us atheists to be angry about, and there's righteous anger. All political movements involve some kind of discomfort and anger at the world. That doesn't mean we're like psychologically gritting our teeth and we're, we're trying to barge into churches and all that. But don't you also think another part of the reason we are asked why we're so angry is that oftentimes I will make these very gentle, friendly comments about the Bible that make them angry, and then they project that they're angry and they project it back on me and they say, why are you so angry? Well, actually, they should be angry too.
Well, they should be, and I think that that's a good point. I think that this is something that a lot of atheists have pointed out, is that we get accused of being angry and of being confrontational and in your face and, you know, intolerant and so on, really for saying very mild things, you know, for simply saying, I don't agree with you, or, you know, I don't think you have any good evidence for that. And this is something that a lot of people have pointed out, is that when we talk about politics, when we talk about science or medicine, when we talk about even art or popular culture, you know, we engage in very vigorous public debate and very vigorous public discourse. And yet somehow when religion is the topic, that's not considered to be okay. You know, it's definitely not considered to be okay to critique religion with the same vigor that we would critique any other kind of idea. Religion has very much gotten a free ride in the marketplace of ideas. And I think that you have a good point. I hadn't thought about it that way, but I think that there is a lot of projection that when we critique religion, even in the mildest manner, religious believers, they get upset, they get angry, and then they project that anger onto us. I hadn't thought about it that way, but I think you're right.
Now, I kind of think we should save Chapter 8, the top 10 reasons I don't believe in God, as a teaser for the last segment. But could we jump to Chapter 9, why religion is useful? Is useful is a terrible argument. You call it the Santa delusion. Do you want to talk about that?
Sure. That's actually one of my very favorite chapters. So there's this argument that, of course, a lot of atheists have heard, which is that it doesn't really matter whether religion is true or not, because religion is useful. People find it comforting, and it gives people guidance, and, you know, it gives people moral restrictions. And so it doesn't really matter whether it's true or not, because it makes people happy and it makes people better behaved. And the analogy I draw is with Santa Claus. I mean, you know, it's like, believing in Santa Claus makes lots of little kids very happy. It gets them very excited around Christmas time, and it probably makes lots of kids behave better because they want their presents. And but we wouldn't argue that because believing in Santa Claus makes people happy and because it makes them well-behaved, that we should therefore continue to believe in Santa Claus as adults. And yet people will make that exact same argument about God. And I think it's actually very patronizing towards believers to say, oh, well, you can't handle the truth. So, you know, we're just going to let you believe this pretty lie for your whole life. Oh, you shouldn't worry about the boring old truth. You should just believe whatever makes you happy. I think it's a terrible argument for a lot of reasons. For one thing, we need to understand what's true and how the world works in order to know how to act in it. If, you know, to give an obvious example, if we believe in faith healing, we're not going to send our children to the doctor if they get sick, and our children could get really seriously sick or die. And
that happens. That does happen.
And so, therefore, it matters whether the things we believe are true. And in any case, it's patronizing. It's tremendously patronizing to tell people, you can't handle the truth, so you should just believe a pretty lie. You know, we don't say that, you know, it's like we're, you know, we'll let our kids believe in Santa Claus, but there's a point at which we say you're supposed to let go of that.
It seems like a very cynical way to look at humankind, too.
It is. It's true. Yeah. No, it's very, it's as if we're not grown-ups, and the truth doesn't matter, as if reality doesn't matter. And it's one of the things I've found about atheists is that atheists are just passionate about reality. And atheists love reality and love the world. And it's very frustrating to me to see people try to cut other people off from that and say, you shouldn't worry about reality, you should just live in your own head.
Well, the utilitarian argument is basically abandoning the argument. If anyone raises that, you can say, thank you, we won.
Exactly, yes, exactly. And there's a lot of arguments for religion that are like that, where they don't even really argue, here's why I believe in God. They argue, here's why we shouldn't be having this argument.
So you have another chapter up toward the beginning of the book there's a lot of problems about religion, and there's a lot of evils and horrible. And you atheists have some valid criticisms, yes, of course, but you can't really blame religion. You can't really blame Jesus for this. It's just a few, you know, bad eggs. And what do you say to that?
Well, and certainly, I obviously think it's an overstatement to say that every single thing that's ever been done in the name of religion is terrible, you know, and to say that religion is the only terrible cause of anything in the world. Obviously, that's not true. Lots of people do terrible things inspired by a lot of things. But I do think that religion is uniquely capable of causing terrible harm, more so than, say something like political ideology, which is an example of a kind of idea that people have, you know, done terrible things because of. But I think that religion is very much unique. And the reason that religion is unique is that it doesn't have any reality check. You know, religion is this belief in the invisible, in the inaudible voices, and the invisible beings, and the intangible, and essentially the unknowable. And it's a belief in things that happen after we die, and nobody can tell us about it, nobody can see it. And because of that, there's no reality check on it. When people disagree about what they think God wants them to do, there's no way of settling that disagreement the way that we have a way of settling disagreements about, say, politics or science or so on. And so, you know, if somebody believes that God wants them to do something horrible, like, you know, kick their gay child out of the house or stone their daughter to death because, you know, she had sex with somebody outside of marriage, when somebody believes that God is telling them that, there's no reality check. There's no way to tell whether God really said that
or not.
Yeah,
anybody can claim anything.
Now, people can claim absolutely anything.
We are talking with the author of Why Are You Atheists So Angry, Greta Christina. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor here with Dan Barker. We are listening in solidarity to Pussy Riot, to Bride, an instrumental, the young women who are on trial in Russia. And we'll be back to find out from Greta Christina the top 10 reasons why she does not believe in a God.
As Mark Twain said, faith is believing what you know ain't so. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Dan Barker here with Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And we have on the phone with us blogger extraordinaire, Greta Christina. And
did you hear what happened? My spell checker changed Greta Christina to Great Christian. I'm sorry, I apologize for that, Greta.
It does that to me too.
Oh, it does, okay.
And she's author of the hot-off-the-press book, Why Are You Atheists So Angry? 99 Things That Piss Off the Godless. And Greta, I promised for the last segment that we would save your chapter, The Top 10 Reasons I Don't Believe in God, and we can see what we can get through.
Sure.
Do you want to start?
In 6 minutes, okay.
Sure. We may not be able to get through all of them, but right. but we can get a start. So I thought it was important. I'm writing this book on why atheists are angry, and I thought it was important to at least include a couple of chapters on why atheists are not only angry, reasonably so, but on why atheists are right.
Yeah.
Put in encapsulation the main reasons that I think God doesn't exist. And, you know, the one that really always grabs me is the way that consistently throughout history, supernatural explanations of phenomena have been replaced with natural ones. And, you know, there's never been an instance where, you know, after very close examination and careful study of the evidence, we've decided that, you know, the reason for this illness really is demons. You know, we've never decided after close examination that the answer to any question of why things work in the world is the supernatural. And yet, over and over and over again, thousands of times, supernatural explanations have been replaced with natural ones. And that makes me think, why would you ever think that the explanation for any given phenomenon that you don't have the answer to is God or demons or angels or the soul or anything.
But they're always going to find something. How do you explain that? God's
right.
always hiding in
and
these little corners.
Well, you just can't always explain until you figure it out, can you?
Right. And you know, I feel like a better answer is, well, I don't know how to explain that, but again, why would you assume that because you can't explain it, the answer is God? The answer has never been God, ever, in the history of humanity.
Now, you also have as number two for your top reasons for not believing in a God, the inconsistency of world religions.
Yeah, and I think that that's a big one, and that's something that that you really notice when you look at different world religions, is they're so wildly different. You know, there's such a difference between, you know, not just the big, you know, the big five, you know, Christianity and Judaism and Islam and Hinduism and Buddhism, but there's just this tremendous range throughout the world and throughout history of different beliefs about what the God or the gods or whatever supernatural beings are like, and there's no way to resolve these differences. Nobody can point to any evidence for why their particular God is the right one. And that again, that differs greatly from, say, for instance, science, where, you know, of course you have disagreements and debates and so on, but they're kind of on the finer points. And, you know, we've, you know, really come to a tremendous scientific consensus about most of our understanding of how the world works. And, you know, we can look around us at the world and look at evidence and see this is how the world works and come to an agreement on it. And that's not true about religion. We haven't come to any agreement over thousands of years.
They might all be wrong then. They can't all be right, and they might all be wrong. Right?
Exactly. They can't all be right, but they can all be wrong.
Reason number three is the weakness of these arguments, these philosophical arguments that religionists bring forth.
Well, that's definitely one of the things that I found when almost as soon as I started getting into atheist writing and atheist blogging was just how terrible the arguments are. You know, it's once I started, you know, really deeply engaging with debates with believers, for the first year or so, somebody would say, oh, I have a really great argument for God, and I would think, oh, maybe this is the one. Maybe this is the one I haven't heard before. And they're terrible. I mean, most of them don't even address the question of whether God exists. It's sort of this armor of defense against why the question is rude and intolerant and you shouldn't have to ask it anyway. And then when you look at the handful of arguments that are made for religion, you know, they're terrible. It's, you know, the argument from design, which has been shattered by evolution, and it's the first cause argument, which is ridiculous because then you have to ask what caused God in the first place. And, you know, it's just that the arguments are so weak and you see the same ones over and over again. And once you start pressing people on the actual handful of real arguments they have for God, even though they're not very good arguments, inevitably they fall back on, you're mean and intolerant for making me answer these questions in the first place.
Or they become begging the question is what I've noticed. They assume their conclusion within their premises. So they're circular reasoning.
Yes, and definitely there's assuming the conclusion and then contorting the evidence around it. You know, there's certainly a tremendous amount of that.
Now you sort of already addressed this idea about supernatural explanations not really answering anything, but you also put forth the increasing diminishment of God as one of your reasons for not believing in it, him, she, whatever.
Well, yeah, certainly when you look at the history of God, and you look at the history of what we as humanity have said God can do, it's incredible how much God has been shrinking. You know, God used to be, you know, the creator of, you know, creator of floods and storms and, you know, making the tides happen. And then as we got natural explanations for these things, well, okay, God doesn't do that, but, you know, God is still responsible for, like, making people sick and making people well. And then that we understood, oh, well, actually, that's like, you know, germs and viruses and genetics and so on. And, you know, as our understanding of the natural world has increased, you know, the God that people believe in has just gotten smaller and smaller and smaller, you know, to the point where now basically, as my friend Adam Lee, who writes for the Daylight Atheism blog, says, you know, at this point, you know, God is pretty much responsible for, you know, putting the image of the Virgin Mary on sticky buns and making people feel warm, fuzzy feelings in their heart when they go to church. You know, it's and that to me says, well, if God were real, then as we understood the world better, you know, God wouldn't be getting smaller and smaller. God would be getting bigger and bigger, and we would be understanding him better, and that's clearly not the case.
We're going to have to let readers read for themselves the rest of the arguments. I notice you save the evidence for argument number 10, the complete lack of solid evidence. I think that's probably one of the biggest, the fact that you can't prove it, right?
Yeah, and to some extent, that should have been the only argument I had to make. I mean, that should have been it. That should be the one argument that I had to make there was there's no good evidence to believe in God. But because people's belief in God is so deep and people are so attached to it, it's not enough to just say, hey, there's no good evidence for this, and that ends the question. You know, people are very, very attached, and it can be very difficult to pry people out of their faith.
Thank you so much, Greta Christina, author of Why Are You Atheists So Angry? Get it now. It's Pitchstone Publishing, Charlottesville, Virginia, on Kindle. Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
That's Greta Christina. We also want to thank Dave McCann, our producer. Free Thought Radio is recorded right here in Madison, Wisconsin. And you can sign up for our podcast or hear the archives at ffrf.org/radio.
Ask for more information at ffrf.org. Join us at ffrf.org. Phone 1-800-335-4021 for the August issue of Free Thought Today, which is very lively, full of our high school winners, our essay competition. Tune in next week for more rational radio and blasphemous broadcasting.
Free Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker.
I hope someday